The governor heads to Israel with plans to spend Christmas in Jerusalem. What's behind it? The Court of Appeals hears from Charlie White. An Indianapolis native shares Time's Man of the Year distinction, and there's still no answer on HIP 2.0. That plus David McIntosh takes over the Club for Growth, Indy as a top destination, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 12, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Governor Mike Pence announced plans to take a 9-day trip to Israel. He will meet with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and will be joined for 3 days by the state's economic development team. He and his family will celebrate Christmas in Jerusalem. The trip is being paid for by a group called Christians United for Israel.
The ability to be over there in a very real sense, reflect on the important relationship that the people of Indiana have had with the people of Israel for generations in this state is a great privilege for me.
Just how unusual is the Pence visit to Israel? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is that trip appropriate?
For a governor or for somebody who aspires to national office? I mean, that's obviously what he's doing. He's spending time in Israel. He's going to Iowa. He's going to New Hampshire. The only thing he isn't doing is doing anything for Indiana, but, you know, he thinks that he is presidential timber, and so he's going to be doing that, and he's going to be tacking further and further and further to the right in order to try to get the Republican nomination. We'll see it happen.
Well, in the interview I conducted with him that produced the soundbite that you just heard, I asked him if he thought he had a launching pad for national office, and he gave the answer he always gives, that when people talk to me about success, I tell them it goes back to the people of Indiana. Is he trying to have it both ways here?
How many are in Israel?
First of all, I think there's a simple answer to this. I mean, it is a focus on Indiana. I heard Ann's view of it, of course, and that's pretty natural. But they've had a very aggressive economic development and presence and effort. They had record job creation through our IEDC, our Indiana Economic Development Corporation, last year. I think we're going to head to another record in 15, given the way the economy is working. We have Indiana businesses, many, that do business in Israel. $57 million spent there last year, actually gained from business in Israel. There's a lot going on here, pharmaceuticals, the aeronautics industry. We have a lot of ways by which we can, I think, find some investment opportunities in Israel. It's a very aggressive entrepreneurial place, and so it's really a good place to go, to be aggressive in terms of searching out global business to come back to Indiana.
That was very good. That was very good, John. And you stayed away from trying to burnish his lacking of foreign policy
credentials. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about it, I'm glad you raised that, because if you look at his record in the Congress, he has a very strong record in foreign policy issues. A lot of people don't know that. And, uh-huh. and you look back on some of his work.
Well, most people focus on him shutting government down.
But in this case,
this effort, shut it down.
And this IEDC-led effort is really there about jobs for Indiana. Uh-huh.
But as governor,
hold that thought.
As governor, this will be his third foreign trade mission this year: Germany, England, and now Israel. That's unusual.
Perhaps so, although we have seen any number of his predecessors in the Indiana governor's office make it a point to travel extensively. Now,
three
more so
in 1 year?
More so in Southeast Asia and so forth.
One trip a year.
One trip a year, not three.
Well,
I don't think he likes Indiana.
Well, look,
I think that's clear.
You're probably got a research analyst in there. I'm not sure we all have the facts about that because we just don't know.
I don't know how many there. But look, there are probably are economic opportunities. But when you go and you meet with Benjamin Netanyahu and when you promise to give a major foreign policy address while you're there, it certainly opens speculation. And we all know in this business, speculation's important. And even if it's meant as an economic development trip, let's say in his close circle, that's not how it's viewed by Politico and by the Washington Post, which had a lengthy piece on Mike Pence, I think ran just today. And the buzz there is that this is burnishing his credentials. Mitt Romney went, back four years.
Certainly not avoiding that opportunity, right?
Thanks, John. Well, with three of us here, who knows which one is which? But I think it is an interesting situation for the governor because it does allow him to act presidential, quote unquote. The thing about the trip that I have a little bit of pause. Fine. Send the IEDC over. If you want to go over and make a trip to Israel for economic development purposes, that's fine. Then let the state pay for it. I have a problem when you have these private groups paying for these trips. I think that if it's a good idea, then the state ought to be paying for that.
Well, but you know what?
Maybe he's just being honest about that.
There are an awful lot of folks in Congress who get sponsored trips.
I don't like those either.
I don't either.
I think it's a terrible idea.
Maybe he's being honest. Because it is going for his presidential campaign and not because of economic development.
A couple of other things just for the people that are paying attention at home. I mean, every governor in my lifetime, which has now been quite lengthy,
we hope it lasts longer.
Has gone to Israel for a visit, and it's normally been paid for by an outside group, and it's not an unusual thing. And in fact, much of his expense for his family, they are paying for personally.
And
so
that's
I want to make
appropriate.
Sure.
I think that's a great thing. I just think that with a private group, then you raise that raises the flag.
He raises someone else's
agenda. I mentioned the Washington Post piece. One telling comment that he offered to the Washington Post was that he thinks that he wouldn't, of course, feed the speculation about his own presidential aspirations. But what he did say is he thought that 2016 would be perhaps a year where foreign issues, foreign affairs, foreign policies are the backdrop for the race.
Which isn't usually the case.
So read into that what you
all right,
want
time now,
your earlier question.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, does it make sense for the governor to go to Israel? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it's entirely up to him. Last week's question was, should the chairman of the State Board of Education be elected by the board? 5% said yes. 95% said no. Big participation. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Indiana Court of Appeals is expected to decide whether to overturn Charlie White's conviction early next year. In 2012, Indiana's former Secretary of State was convicted on 6 counts, including perjury and voter fraud. At a hearing this week, White's attorney, Andrea Chobanu, claimed his former attorney, Carl Brizzi, did not properly represent him at trial.
There's nobody else claiming they're entitled to that money. And the consul didn't want it back. And the consul didn't file anything to remove him because he was doing his job for prior 10 years.
Here's a hint. Move along off that argument. We get it.
So,
and she's talking about salary that he accepted as a council member in Fishers as he was a candidate for Secretary of State or about to become a candidate. John Hammond, what's Charlie White fighting for?
You know, for his reputation, right? I mean, that means something to, that means everything, I should say, to all of us. And that's obviously paramount in his mind. And he sees what happened to him in a certain, from a certain perspective, and he feels wronged, and he's trying to figure out a way to be vindicated.
It's tough to get a conviction overturned.
Oh, very tough.
And there wasn't a defense offered, but that was a decision that it appeared he took part in at the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's always easy to second guess, and it's always easy to blame the attorney who lost the case. That's pretty standard in criminal trials. It's incompetence of counsel. I really don't. I didn't follow it closely enough to know whether Carl Brzee did a good or a bad job, but there was a conviction. And that conviction is going to be very difficult to overturn. And even if part of that argument succeeds, and that is that there's double jeopardy on one or more counts, it doesn't affect either the conviction itself or the sentence. So yeah, I think he's toast.
Well, in the meantime, his life and his career is on hold. He's still got a sentence to serve, which is a year of home detention.
Yeah, I mean, you ask what he's fighting for, and John's right, it is his reputation, but it's also his livelihood. I mean, as an attorney, if you are told you can't practice, then what do you do? And it changes everything in his life. So it's understandable that he would go after this and try to get it overturned. I think Ann's points are well taken, and so he's essentially fighting for his life.
Odds don't look good for Charlie White.
I would think not. I'm no expert in reading the tone or questioning or body language of judges on any panel questioning attorneys, but if I were to venture into that field, I would say this seems like a pretty less than warm reception that that Charlie White's case got. And again, the sentence, this one, as John suggested, one of the Johns suggested, there is this, he's looking at 1 year of home detention, and that's been stayed, of course, right, at the county court level. I'm not sure, not many of us probably would want to stay inside, well, they livelihood or not. I mean, that's
I'm not
that's
sure
a,
how
that
that's defined. He may be able to work during that home detention period,
no,
too.
No,
not.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
But not uncommon, right, for work, right, to be permitted, but then and then be home. But the
it's
bigger
still
problem,
not something that somebody big, would look forward
well,
to.
Well, the bigger problem is obviously his law license.
Right.
That's
he wouldn't
the
be able to
problem.
Work as a lawyer.
Right.
All right. An Indianapolis native will grace the cover of Time magazine as Person of the Year. Dr. Kent Brantley is one of five Ebola fighters pictured to represent those suffering and treating the disease. Since he was diagnosed with Ebola in July, Brantley has used the spotlight to be a spokesperson for the people of West Africa. He traveled to Liberia with his family in October of 2013 as a medical missionary. And now that he's well, his family says he'll most likely continue that work in the future.
He said, "It's still not about me." And it isn't. It's about this horrible epidemic that so many people have died and families have been torn apart.
If you can come, come. If you can't, cover for somebody who can come. If you can, if you're pray, pray. And if you can contribute other kinds of resources, money, then everybody who can needs to do what they can.
And that's his father, Jim Brantley, preceded by his mother, Jan. John Ketzenberger, how do you rate that honor?
Well, I think it's a worthy honor, and I also think for him and the others collectively who have responded to this crisis in Africa, it's not the last of the honors that they'll receive, because the work that they did was fearless and important and courageous, and I think it's an appropriate honor, and I again think it won't be the last time these folks are honored because of what they've done.
It is a tremendous honor. You look not only at this instance with this particular outbreak, but time and time again around the world, when bad things happen and nature decides to wreak havoc with the health of individuals, people like this go into harm's way. And so I think it's a well-deserved honor. And you look at the people who were finalists for the honor, Taylor Swift, I think this is a much better. seriously, that's not a joke.
Well,
that was
yeah,
one of the.
A little more meaningful. It's the sort of person that you want, an example you want to follow.
You know, he is emblematic of all in the healthcare field. People have decided to serve others. But he and others, and not only represented on the cover of Time magazine, but others that have been to West Africa to fight this disease, are really go above and beyond the call of duty. These are Medal of Honor winners, in a sense. This takes an act of bravery beyond almost anything any of us and most people at home can contemplate. It's a risk. It's rooted in a great faith and care for people. And I suspect not just the honor of it will serve Dr. Brantley well. I think you'll find himself back again, and he's someone who's not just going to sit there on his laurels. and wait for the next award. I think he's going to be out fighting again on this disease.
We could be accused of grasping for an Indianapolis tie here, but Indiana University Hospitals has been very involved in this Ebola fight.
Absolutely, and they've had a presence in Africa for years and years and years,
right,
battling a whole deprivation of health care for thousands and thousands of people. But you're right. I mean, this takes courage, because this is where you choose to go into an area where you know that the risk of illness and death is so substantial, and that they do it time and time again. It's not only a testament to them. I hope it'll serve as an inspiration to others to do the same thing.
Mike Pence granted a series of interviews this week to look back over 2014, and I asked him about some unfinished business. The governor is still waiting for federal approval for his Medicaid expansion by another name, HIP 2.0.
All the way through late last week, I've been in direct discussions with the Secretary of Health and Human Services on the subject of our waiver, and I continue to remain hopeful.
John Schwanes, the Pence administration wanted HIP 2.0 to be in place by the end of the year. What should they expect now?
It won't be in place by the end of the year, I think.
What should they hope for?
It's a pretty safe assessment. I don't think it's if there's any shock here that you have had a rub between the federal government and the policy position put forth by the Pence administration. There are fundamental catch points in terms of contributions
in the form of
co-payments. But then you also have, there are some other side issues, but
I think that's where the hang-up is, based on what the governor says.
And that is the notion that it's consumer-oriented, that people make a contribution. But that is also a fundamental counter to the notion of Medicaid and how it's currently funded.
Yeah, but the politics here are intriguing, because the Medicaid expansion is a part of Obamacare. The president wants that to happen. The governor wants to prove that Medicaid can be done better, but neither one of them wins unless they can come together.
See, I think that's the important thing to think here. John's exactly right about the governor's position, but the administration, the federal, the U.S. administration wants this too, because the more expansion that they have, the better it is for the health care plan that they want, too. So there is incentive on both sides, and that's why it hasn't blown up. That's why there's still conversation, and why it's still a possibility, and why it's ultimately likely to happen. It's just a matter of time, and that's very frustrating for people who are waiting on this.
Well, I'm not sure that it's ultimately likely to happen, because I think it's important for the governor to put the health care of Hoosiers ahead of his own ideology and his political ambition. Well, and I think they're running counter at the moment.
He says he and and Sylvia Burwell, the HHS secretary, were talking last week.
That's fine, and nobody's moved. And what worries me about this is the more he's thinking about running for president, the more he's going to go to the right, and the less likely he is to compromise on what is a fundamental problem. Right now, we've got over 7 million people covered by Obamacare, and the result of it is, besides everybody getting coverage, is that the growth in the cost of health care has been the lowest in years and years and years. And we need to have the 350,000 Hoosiers that don't have coverage covered.
Mike Pence needs this to happen.
Yes, and so do Hoosiers, and I think Mike Pence has the right approach. It's one based on some fundamentals that Mitch Daniels put in place about personal responsibility, having some skin in the game. The health of our society in Indiana will be greater. It will be less expense to the entire health care system if we can put this in place.
Well, the federal government's gone along with that on the original HIP program, but that's
not
Medicaid. But that's not Medicaid.
And you know what? And as Governor Pence has been saying, this is not an expansion of a pure expansion of Medicaid. The longer this takes,
Medicaid money.
The longer this takes, the more it proves that this is not Medicaid as usual.
Oh,
and
John.
It is not. And indeed, it's a whole different concept. One in which
it
if we adopt it nationally, I think it will go
all
a long way.
All it has is a different
helping
name.
Helping with our health care costs.
Important. I've said all along that if the governor can come away saying that this was HIP 2.0, it doesn't matter what it's called, he will find a way to turn. I mean,
that's
here's a fellow, remember, with income tax proposal, he wanted 10%, got 5. He was a champion
and
of
I've
cuts.
Said all along,
so as long as there's something he can walk away with, he's skillful enough as a politician to be able to label it a victory.
I don't care what he calls it, as long as we get the health care covered. But what worries me is, as he tacks to the right, that he'll say, well, I really am a true conservative, and I'm going to blow this up.
It's not to the right, it's right up the middle. That's what most Americans and most people in Indiana think.
He's right up the middle?
With this, program, this is right up the center. This is what people expect others to participate in.
David McIntosh has returned to politics full-time. The former Indiana congressman is the new president of the Tea Party PAC Club for Growth. He replaces former Indiana Congressman Chris Ciccola. In a release, McIntosh called the Club for Growth the premier organization for fighting big government liberals in both parties. He said he looks forward to building on that reputation. John Hammond, what do establishment Republicans think of the Club for Growth?
Well, I think in David McIntosh's hands, I think it will be a better place.
You'd rather see him there than Chris Ciccola?
Yes. And I think all we have to do is look at some things that happened in 2012 around the country, and including in Indiana, and how misplayed their work was and strategy happens to have been, and it's unfortunate.
You're referring to their support of Richard Murdoch.
Yeah, and the fact that that seat is now in the hands of a Democrat. And there's probably one place where that blame could be laid, and a lot of it's right with the Club for Growth. So I think this is going to be an improvement.
The Club for Growth in 2012 also supported one David McIntosh in an unsuccessful bid to win a congressional primary.
Right.
There's some irony there.
Well, I mean, he lost for governor and he lost for Congress, so he needs a job. I mean, that's, I suppose, ironic.
I think he's been a successful lobbyist.
Oh, a lobbyist. Yeah, so he's gone from lobbying the big government that he is opposing to. The only thing I'd say on this is if I were Dan Coats, I'd sleep with one eye open.
Isn't it interesting?
This is not a surprise, though, right? I mean, David McIntosh, this is right up his alley. He's going to focus on the fiscal policy piece of this, and I think we'll stay away from some of the other aspects. As they like to say,
he's been a movement conservative for three decades.
And he also doesn't have the personal financial wherewithal that Chris Ciccola had and was able to use at his will. So I think that David McIntosh is going to have to depend more on issues and fundraising in order to make his platform go forward.
You know, Does he still have the house that he borrowed for a while and wherever it was?
He was renting in Anderson.
I just want to know if he's going to be the opponent in the primary.
John Hammond alluded to the fiscal conservatism, and that is certainly the bread and butter traditionally of the Club for Growth. But one thing that will be interesting to watch is David McIntosh has been certainly behind the scenes trying to forge stronger coalition with or alliance between fiscal conservatives, the traditional backers of Club for Growth, and religious conservatives, traditionally they've eschewed social issues and those types of things, and foreign policy. So if, in fact, he succeeds in bringing those forces together, certainly it would be more potent than it has been. Because let's look at it has a record of success in the past, but if you look at Dick Lugar, you look at Thad Cochran, you look at a lot of other establishment candidates who were able to thumb their nose.
Right.
Dick Lugar wasn't, but others were.
And they laid out in some significant races this year, like Mitch McConnell's,
They retrenched a little bit.
This is a national organization. We go from Ciccola from Indiana to McIntosh from Indiana, based in large part on what happened in Indiana in 2012. I mean, are we the center of the conservative universe?
You know, we are a conservative state, but we've produced in those two people some very capable individuals. One, a great entrepreneur and business person, and a great lawyer, University of Chicago Law School. Brilliant guy, worked in the White House. I think David McIntosh will do a good job.
Well, and complete the loop here. We started talking about a possible presidential bid by Mike Pence, who, of course, close ally of David McIntosh. If you just want to make things really interesting, you close the loop and say, what would that duo?
In fact, I had a nice conversation with David McIntosh at the Pence inauguration. Finally, Indianapolis has been named as one of the top 10 places people should visit in 2015. Lonely Planet, a travel media company, cited the Indianapolis Children's Museum, the Electric Car Program, and the Indianapolis Zoo's International Orangutan Center as reasons to visit the Circle City. Chris Gall at Visit Indy isn't surprised by the ranking.
We work with a sense of urgency every day to work with meeting planners and event planners to say, book Indy, come to Indy, and here are a few reasons why. And having third-party credibility like a Lonely Planet stamp us approved helps us in our storytelling and the sales process of Indianapolis.
And Delaney, does Indianapolis deserve that ranking, or is this just good marketing?
No. I mean, there's a lot to do here. It's not. Those obviously are, I mean, certainly the Children's Museum and the zoo and the art museum, and there are so many restaurants and theaters available. I think it deserves it, and neighborhoods as well. So it's great.
Speaking of the art museum, announced today that they're going to start charging $18 admission in March, where it used to be free. Will that take down the ranking?
That's why you need to join as a member,
yes.
Which is something you should have done a long time ago.
Free visits you've been making. I've made a few.
Got to get a little culture.
I know you have.
Very.
A little.
Indianapolis, you know, I look at it as the Athens of the Midwest. I think we've got something here that is really unique. I think Anna's absolutely right. It is. It should be one of the great places to visit and to live.
And it's also a very easy city to get around, as opposed to a lot of other ones. You can go, you can drive, you can park, you can do all the things you want to do with your bikes. It's good.
Come visit. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.